Hi, podcasters. This is Brooke with Let's Talk Art. Today I'm talking art with Willie Thompson of the Fitzgerald Museum in Montgomery, Alabama. Many don't know that Zelda Fitzgerald, flapper icon and wife of the famous F. Scott, was quite an accomplished artist. Join us as we explore her career and life. We are still in the process of lining up sponsors for Let's Talk Art with Brooke, but in the meantime, if you'd like to support the podcast, please look for my book, Reptiles on Caffeine, on Amazon. Enjoy the podcast.
Well, and you're located where?
In Charlotte, North Carolina.
Okay. What do you do for a living?
Well, I'm a writer, and I'm doing the podcast as sort of a... I'm working on a book on a guy you probably haven't heard of. No one has. His name is Hugh Lane. He's an art dealer from Ireland. 19th century type. And
cool.
He's a really interesting guy, and he's related to my boyfriend distantly. And so I'm kind of doing this kind of like a podcast of art, just kind of learning about different art, and I've always liked art, and I was a graphic design major in school, and just really gotten into the fine arts recently, and so just kind of reaching out to different galleries and museums, find out what's, about different exhibitions that are going on, and just finding out a whole new world. And I went through a Fitzgerald phase like a while back, and I'm still in it. I still really, really like him. I really like Zelda. And especially, since she's doing the art or did the art stuff. And just thought that was really cool and found you guys. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is awesome.
This fits right in. Cool.
Yeah, definitely. So I was super excited. So.
Well, I'm happy to be on and be on your show. I mean, we'll certainly, whenever it gets posted, we'll share it through all of our social media.
Awesome.
And
awesome.
Yeah, I think we reach, like, depending on the post, we'll reach between, 2,000, 4,000 people on Facebook, and then probably an additional 1,000 on Twitter. Because we're literary in nature, we tend to... Twitter doesn't really avail itself very well to what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's hard to tell a story in 140 characters or whatever.
Right.
Our Facebook is really strong, so this should work out great for you, hopefully, in terms of getting you a little press on your podcast.
Cool. Thank you. I appreciate it. So.
All right, well, I'll get to a place. You called me. I'll jump in the car, leaving the museum, and now I'm just getting to a place where I can pull over and concentrate on our discussion.
Oh, no worries. Cool.
And is the audio good?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, good. And also the reason I have is because the HD these smartphones are supposed to be smart enough to drown out background noise, and it is a nice 100-degree heat index here in Montgomery. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's pretty hot here in Charlotte.
I'm so ready for the fall.
Yeah, I am too.
I think fall comes to y'all. You probably get start to get cooler days about 2 or 3 weeks before we do. Generally speaking, in Montgomery, the heat will run all the way through the end of September. We'll start getting a few cool mornings, probably mid-September. When I say cool, I mean 64, mm-hmm. 65.
Yeah.
But when I went to school in Virginia, I felt like you would start getting days in the low 80s with that nice dry air. Not that I want to live for doing something for the north, but you start getting those bits of temper.
Right. Yeah, well,
Are you a native?
Sorry?
Are you a native?
No, I was born in upstate New York. And we moved down here with the IBM move, and my dad worked for IBM, and there was a big exodus, I guess, and we moved down in 1980, and so I've been here since then. So I'm pretty much a native.
Oh, okay.
I really like it.
I've got family that lives in Raleigh. Actually, half of them in Greece, and the other half in Raleigh.
Yeah.
And that's not too terribly far, is it?
No, it's about 3 hours away.
Okay. Well, further enough.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm almost at my stopping point. Hang on. And then we can get down to the, what they call the nitty gritty.
The nitty gritty.
The nitty gritty of Velma and Scott Fitzgerald. And most interesting.
Definitely. Couple. Definitely. Yeah, and way ahead of their time.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah, totally. Velma was really extraordinary in terms of not being the woman that all the men wanted her to be.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I am ready now when you are.
Okay. Cool, cool. So tell me, I know Zelda was an artist. She was a ballerina. She was like a lot of different things, and she was a writer. And but I'm interested really in her art. And I know that you guys have her art, you know, displayed in the museum. And so tell me a little bit about how the museum is laid out.
Well, the museum covers all of Scott and Zelda's lives because you wouldn't be able to create much of a museum to a particular point in their life.
Mm-hmm.
It really, anywhere. The only place I could think of that you could create maybe a museum that's solely dedicated to a certain time period would be the 4 years that Zelda, 4.5 years mm-hmm. that Zelda spent in the Asheville Hospital.
Right.
Highland Hospital in Asheville.
Uh-huh.
But even, you know, you're talking about, you know, sketchy record keeping, letters are probably going to be your main source there. Day-to-day activities. In fact, the building where Hal burned down, you know, burned, of course, there's nothing to be destroyed. So,
right.
Our museum basically just, we take on the lion's share of the story. And our artifacts stretch all the way back to Zelda's grandmother
mm-hmm.
and her family.
Wow.
And you run all the way through the grandchildren. We've got photos and letters from Zelda's daughter, their only daughter, Scotty.
Mm-hmm.
Scott and Zelda's daughter's children.
Right.
Photos, yeah. Photos of them. So we're really sort of a Fitzgerald family museum.
Uh-huh.
But because Fitzgerald himself, Scott, is the most well-known mm-hmm. internationally, you know, he ends up being the main draw.
Right.
People are generally extraordinarily surprised when they come for Scott and leave, you know, probably hearing about as much, if not more, about Zelda in our museum.
Right.
You know, we're located in Montgomery, Alabama. That's where Zelda's from.
That's really right.
A visitor's going to get a run through, starting back when Zelda was a young girl. Her father was appointed to the Alabama Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
All the way through her death in 1948, and then really the story of how she and Scott went from being at the time of their death, he in 40, and once again she in 48, went from being sort of forgotten by their peers and by their time period to being what we know today as, you know, arguably the most influential couple of the early 20th century, and
right.
not just national but international.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, everyone knows who they are.
Yeah, Scott and Zelda, you don't even have to say F. Scott. You
yeah,
Scott
exactly,
Zelda,
exactly.
Exactly what you're talking about.
Exactly. And I remember seeing pictures of Zelda, like, when I was really young. I remember seeing pictures of both of them when I was really young. I didn't know who they were, really, but I knew.
Right.
But I can.
But those iconic faces, right.
Right, right. So I knew they were someone famous, someone important. So, and Zelda was, she suffered from depression and psychosis and basically, so how did, and manic depression and that sort of thing. But so how do you think that really influenced her art? Because I mean, that can make really good art.
Absolutely. And I remember, I remind people at the museum on a regular basis,
mm-hmm.
There's an old adage, you've probably heard it, palm CDs never made a skillful sailor.
Right.
And, you know, the idea here is that, you know, people that are deeply content,
mm-hmm.
well-rounded, even-keeled people,
right,
generally don't make good artists.
Exactly.
there's a certain strange vibration to people that are pushing their own personal boundaries and their own personal visions and their personal cultural and social envelopes in which they're born and raised and in which they move during their lives, to find something that's truly unique, to find something that's truly laudable, commendable in our circle. We know that Zelda was a flamboyantly rebellious young woman,
right?
And teenager. We also know this through the constant doodler. And we also know from psychological studies today that kids seem to be drawing all the time and not listening.
Right.
May be marching to the beat of a slightly different drummer.
Right.
In terms of their psychological makeup.
Mm-hmm.
Zelda, it is important for people to know that we do not try to hide in any mask in any way, shape, or fashion. Zelda had a mental problem. It was a problem.
Right.
Now, out of that problem came some pretty beautiful art, as we're going to talk about. But you know, her mom's mom committed suicide at age 58,
mm-hmm.
and committed suicide because her 80-year-old husband, who was actually his third wife, her 80-year-old husband died in a runaway carriage accident.
Oh my
and
gosh.
Here we are looking at a woman who's got 20, 30 years left on her life, good years left on her life, who killed herself because a man who had a few years left on his own life died in an accident.
Wow.
We have her father, who, by some accounts, and it's a little sketchy, came over to see her brother, came over to Zelda's house, and Zelda's a child, and then killed herself in the next room.
Oh, my gosh.
We have her brother, who lost his job. Zelda's brother lost his job in 33, believed that because of his inability to maintain constant employment during the Great Depression, that he would become a burden on his recently widowed mother. This is Zelda's mother.
Mm-hmm.
Zelda's father actually died while they were living in Montgomery. But, you know, he takes his own life after he loses his job. And mm-hmm. then her eldest grandson in 1973. You know, he was a Vietnam War veteran,
mm-hmm.
Obviously had a great deal of PTSD and had this isolated sort of in what is, you know, metaphorically and physically sort of limbo. He, you know, came back from the war, but then stayed in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. Never really made it all the way back to the States and reintegrated.
Right.
And then eventually ended up taking his own life in 73. So whatever it was, and I've been told numerous times by actual psychologists that pumped the Still Museum,
mm-hmm.
that it's not really important that we find the correct terminology for understanding Zelda, because it'll always be guesswork.
Right.
Because you're dealing with someone who passed away in 1948.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important to know that she was struggling,
mm-hmm.
Very much so, and this was normative for her gene pool.
Right.
So the early doodling sort of progresses into a general artsy lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she married Scott because he's artsy.
Yeah.
She had plenty of boys that were plenty of young men that had as much money as Scott or more,
mm-hmm.
You know, compared to what he made off his first novel. But Scott was different because he was creative. And right. Zelda loves that about Fitzgerald.
Right.
And you read their early love letters to each other, and they're just dripping with romantic sentiment.
Right.
You know, we're talking about personifying the moths on headstones,
mm-hmm.
at the local cemetery.
Right.
But probably she began to envision herself as a professional artist leading up to the publication of The Great Gatsby.
Uh-huh.
And that is likely in response to the failure to reach Fitzgerald's level as a to reach Fitzgerald's pay grade as a short story writer,
uh-huh.
in the early 20s after they got married. So mm-hmm. by 1944, you see her begin to take lessons in Paris. That's mm-hmm. while Scott is editing Gatsby.
Mm-hmm.
There is a famous story, anecdote told by Charles Scribner, that basically he told Fitzgerald, listen, I like the novel, but nowhere, you know, in my reading of it, do I get a clear picture of what Gatsby looks like.
Right.
And so Scott went to Zelda and said, hey, Zelda, you know, he's right. I've written this entire novel, and I can't even picture the protagonist.
Right.
So Zelda sat down apparently all day long and just drew him in space. Until Scott and Velvet decided, oh, there he is, there she had to be, and then Scott went back and edited the novel to reflect that portrayal of Gatsby.
Uh-huh.
Then in 25, Scott arranged for Zelda, through his agent, Harold Over, arranged for Zelda to have some art, an art exhibition in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And, not a whole lot of information to pass down to us on that, other than critically it was mocked.
It was mocked?
And Zelda mocked, yes. Like, the critics had this attitude that this is sort of a dog and pony show.
Huh.
Because Zelda is a flapper.
Right.
And her husband is the famous artist.
Right.
The true intellectual here.
Right.
She was up against it at that time period. And you really sort of see Zelda go into artistic remission in terms of a professional for about 7 years. Not until 1932 that she began submitting paintings again.
Right.
And that's after the second mental breakdown, when she's in Baltimore. She's submitting to the Independence show in Baltimore. And by that time, she's 32.
Mm-hmm.
Same year that her novel came out and was a critical failure once again.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have about 10 years of art therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Her doctors, by 1933, when Zelda was an outpatient, still up in Baltimore, outpatient Johns Hopkins Hospital, doctors are recommending, look, when you're not here, underneath our watch, you need to be engaging in 3 to 4 hours of painting or drawing every day. Really the beginning of the art therapy movement, although it didn't have that moniker at that point. And then, again, finally, there's this sort of like 7-year remission where it's all not for professional gain. It's all for really sort of for beauty and for love of the art form, if you will. And she's painting with gouache at this time. She's oil colors. George O'Keefe is her greatest influence. She saw O'Keefe galleries in 1932 and 1933 in Baltimore and in Washington, D.C. She apparently would have massive emotional response to some of O'Keefe's work.
Mm-hmm.
I truly believe that was because O'Keefe, was a feminist painter, and he's painting highly charged feminine flowers.
Right.
And Zelda began to mimic that. And this carries on all the way to the early 40s. Zelda's sort of painting for therapy.
Uh-huh.
And then you have the final attempt at being a professional. And that's really an 8-year process. She gets out of the hospital in April of 1940. She dies there 8 years later in March of 48. And in 42, you have the Montgomery Museum of Fine Arts doing an exhibit on Zelda. In 43, if I recall correctly, the New York Times reviews a gallery that she set up in New York. The title of that review, by the way, was Jazz Age Priestess Brings Forth Painting.
Uh-huh.
Once again, a derisive, mocking tone.
Yeah.
The idea is here is, the model for wild behavior, wild living back during the 20s, attempting to be famous again.
Right.
And then when she died in 48, she got the studio full of paintings in Montgomery.
Mm-hmm.
She's been working for 8 years, and when she dies, her sisters have a trying to sell them.
Mm-hmm.
And when not many sell, unfortunately, the sisters destroyed the rest of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's really it's a convoluted, sort of circular tale of Zelda's attempts to be an artist, to truly own it.
Mm-hmm.
It's tragic in some aspects, and then on the other aspect, when you realize that artist wouldn't really the only thing besides Scott's visits and Scott's letters that is carrying her through this extraordinarily dark time, Great Depression, and her battle with her own depression.
Right.
It's really extraordinary.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. It's amazing the healing power of art, and I think that the power to sustain people, I think. So,
absolutely.
I think you're right on. How much? So she was doing. She was painting, and what kind of topics influenced her? Like what kind of portrayals did she do?
Well, early in life, we know that she was into pastoral scenery. Mm-hmm. So the earliest painting we have in the museum, done by Zelda, to oil before she moved into watercolors, is basically a swamp scene. Mm-hmm. Got a big live oak growing in a swamp, and believed to have been done in her late teens in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
This had been probably 1919 when this painting was completed. Zelda's paintings, by the way, notoriously difficult to date because she could date them. And secondly, she wasn't really very good at painting. She does seem to have this sort of almost, amaterialistic, beatnik approach to life.
She never signed them?
A lot of times, no. She didn't even sign them. Just painted things and would give them away to people.
Oh, wow.
She enjoyed paper dolls. And that was really engendered because of her
daughter.
To provide entertainment for her daughter, Scotty, in the early 1920s. Paper dolls cover everything from, medieval fantasy, Arthur and his knights, to historical figures. We have a collection of King Louis XIV paper dolls in the Fitzgerald Museum.
Mm-hmm.
And also fairy tales, Goldilocks and the Three Bears, really, anything that involves Hansel and Gretel, anything that involves Zelda seemed to really be drawn to.
Right.
The paper dolls were another lifelong project. Started in 20s, ran through when she died. Then you have the swirls, as we spoke about,
mm-hmm.
inspired by George O'Keefe.
Mm-hmm.
From there, she moved into, this is now getting into the 40s, she moved into cityscapes. We also believe the cityscapes were highly influenced by O'Keefe. Zelda had a way of basically jumbling up the skyline of the cityscape, which O'Keefe was not well known for doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then after cityscapes, there is this beautiful, this is between 44 and 48, this beautiful transition from unchoculated canvases. And you're talking about that pop-headed in the people mm-hmm. in the canvases. So all of a sudden, paintings being painted with memories of she and Scott and little Scotty back when their heady days of travel back in the 1920s, and then jumping over to the 1940s and paintings of Scotty and her husband.
Mm-hmm.
Scotty married Jack Lanahan in 1943, and Zelda would paint paintings of them.
Mm-hmm.
On to 1946, when her eldest grandson was born. When the paintings really take this massive turn into what we can pretty much safe to say is Zelda's true expression of all that she's learned. It's got elements of set design, which we know she was very fond of dollhouses and the paper dolls, and also she would create sets for the paper dolls to play in. So they look like paintings that have theatrical backdrops. Surrealistic figures, and these are fairy tales. Once again, you get Goldilocks, you get the Three Little Pigs, a lot of Alice in Wonderland in that time period, too, where Zelda's favorite stories. And then finally, jumping forward to the 47, 48 time period, right before death, where Zelda was, has found solace not only in art, but also in Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And she was painting religious paintings, mostly stories of Jesus' life or parables or teachings of Jesus' life. But the figures, and last but not least, there are the ballerinas.
Ah, yeah.
And we all know that Zelda was obsessed with ballet.
Yeah.
Ballerina being a girl and through the end of her days.
Right.
So, her style stretches over a number of different categories, but I think really what you're seeing when you look at those art is it's always a reflection of where she's finding beauty in her own life.
Mm-hmm.
And, like I said, starting off in Pasadena, Alabama, going into sort of this fantastical landscape of the 1920s when, she and Scott are just living like kings.
Right.
And then you know, when times get tough, mimicking a professional, trying to get, well, you know, how did the professional take this in the George O'Keefe years, and then getting sentimental in her 40s when she's alone. Mm-hmm. And Scott's gone, and she's living with her mom in Montgomery, and Scotty's grown up, and Bill is really a woman with a lot of time to reflect.
Mm-hmm.
And so her paintings are examples of that, that self-reflection.
Right, right. She's so fascinating. She's like lived the perfect life, I think. Except for the madness.
Yeah. Well, you could say that she did the best she could with the treatment they had.
Right, right.
You know, there have been people who have drawn some of Zelda's fantasy sort of landscapes to the numbness caused by electric shock therapy. Basically, life just becomes a waking dream.
Right.
Because your brain is just in a quasi-comatose state.
Yeah.
It's tragic, yes, but at the same time, not if you can take something so difficult and turn it into art.
Right.
I think that's what art is for.
Yes. Yes, I absolutely agree. I absolutely agree. So yeah, and I think she's the best example of someone. I mean, I'm sure lots of people have done that, but I mean, I think she's the most probably one that everyone can point to.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
So how did you get involved in the Fitzgeralds?
Well, first off, you have to be an English major, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to be a Fitzgerald fan. I was actually more of a fan of the period.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's one of these things, hush, hush, you know, your podcast listeners, some might throw stones at me.
Uh-huh.
But I was born to Hemingway,
then
Fitzgerald. And that was probably the greatest for the young man.
Right.
But as I've come along, I realized that Scott and Zelda they're just more human.
Right.
In terms of, you know, they're who they were.
Right.
Hemingway almost became a character for to what he believed to be true manhood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, isolation, individual strength. I got into Scott and Zelda because, A, I was living in the museum.
Mm-hmm.
And so the museum has two apartments, you have three.
Mm-hmm.
So I was living in that third apartment, which was such a mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was, you know, got to see the museum. And I got to, you know, I was writer at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And working at a bar on the street called Pine Bar.
Mm-hmm.
And two of my clients, they came on a regular basis while on the board. So there began to be this sort of incestuous discussion at the bar about my living in the house and the fact that they were going to need a new executive director soon, executive director after the old one was going to retire and go to teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sort of fell into it. It's, you know, it wasn't I didn't study museum studies, but as I began to apply the skills that I've gained in the 10 years since I graduated from Washington Lee, I found that basically directing a museum sort of had all of the different parts of my background built into it.
Right.
You know, and I'd worked for a law firm and learned organizational skills in terms of managing case files.
Right.
And then also editorial skills, reading the lawyer's briefs and then, you know, correcting them for errors before we would submit them.
Right.
I filed it with the courts. I was in sales for 2.5 years. So a lot of running a museum is selling the museum to the community because museums basically run on the goodwill of visitors in the community. We need a lot of income from donations.
Mm-hmm.
And you are, regardless of how important, how much intrinsic value what you have has in it, you still have to sell that to people.
Right.
You know, a coffee maker, unfortunately, for most people, has more intrinsic value than what a Zelda's painting.
Yeah.
Unless you're a Zelda fanatic, you know, Zelda's painting might look good on your wall, but you're going to use a coffee maker every day.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to turn around and explain to people the value of what you have. And then I was in... And beyond that, I basically was in public relations as the manager of the Pine Bar. So my background was well suited to taking over the Fitzgerald Museum. I'll tell you that the skill set I had when I came in has been immensely broadened by taking a small museum like the Fitzgerald Museum and growing it into, you know, one of Montgomery's top attractions. And you're doing that in an environment which is actually hostile to Zelda, but I will tell you that the city of Montgomery did bother to save their childhood homes since the 60s and 70s when they got ripped down. And I think that part of the reason for that is, you know, crazy, this sort of crazy woman syndrome, the old patriarchal view of a woman who just never kept her mouth. So it hasn't been an easy sell always, but
right.
Really waking up to and culture the fact that Zelda was much more than just a party girl who, you know, fell off the wagon, if you will. That she was fairly powerful influence on one of the greatest writers that America ever produced. You know, and I don't mean just on a psyche, I mean on all these words. You know, the greatest tricky what was it discovered during her own lifetime.
Right. Right. She really is. Yeah, I'm just in awe of her. I think she's a genius.
She was.
So, I think that's awesome. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me.
Absolutely, Brooke. So, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.
You know, I know it's not just around the corner, but for all your listeners in the Charlotte area, we do have a big slapper party at the end of April every year.
Oh, fun! You're
talking about 300 to 400 guests. And I do have people come from as far away as Memphis and Nashville and Columbia, South Carolina. So,
that's not far.
A little bit further for the Charlotte folks, but you get to see the world's only Fitzgerald Museum in all of its glory during the middle of a 4-hour-long flapper party. So
people
could check out more about that, at least last year, on our website. I will have announcements for the new coming up on the website in the next couple months.
Yeah, that sounds...
Fitzgeraldmuseum.org. Fitzgeraldmuseum.org.
Okay, yeah, I'll put that on the post.
Right.
So yeah, that sounds awesome, and I'd love to come visit. I'm just not sure when I could, but yeah, that sounds like a great trip. Sounds like a good visit. Thank you so much to Willie Thompson of the Fitzgerald Museum for telling us about Zelda Fitzgerald's art career, and thank you to you for listening. If you're in the Montgomery area, check out the gallery. If you're interested in having us promote your product or service, if you have a comment, if you have any ideas for future podcasts, or would like to be on the show yourself, please contact me at arttalkwithbrooke@gmail.com. That's all one word and Brooke with an E. Thanks for listening.
Let's Talk Art with Brooke is a Hotspur Enterprises media production.